Oi, oi, it's your boy, Storm Chaser Jack Slack, coming at you from 100 mile an hour winds, sweeping across the nation. Yeah, lots of trees coming down, which is more a nuisance than anything, but we don't get shit like this in the UK, and it's all very exciting. I understand that a lot of my listeners are probably dudes from Florida who get three or four hurricanes in a month, but it's very exciting over here. And our country skids to a halt if there's half an inch of snow. But anyway, we've got tons of fights going on this week. I'm literally looking at the UFC Strike NFT site as I'm saying this. Because a minute ago, I tweeted that I'm glad that Bellator aren't selling Kimbo NFTs in a joking way. And then I realized the UFC might actually already be selling a Kimbo NFT. But it doesn't look like it is. I suspect the way that it works is all the fighters on the roster have sold their likeness in the course of their contract and are now just stuck with this shit. Oh my God, does this look stupid. I could buy a Jingliang Fight Night July 16th, 2021 KO/TKO NFT for $8 is the lowest asking price, and there's 1,093 available. How much of a mug do you have to be to get in on this stuff? I understand that people have made a lot of money through it, but the way that you make money is that there has to be a mug who's willing to buy it off you. And at some point, everyone's going to realize that, everyone's going to realize that they're just pictures and they don't convey any kind of ownership. But anyway, let's talk about the weekend's fights. There's the UFC, there's KSW, there's Bellator, and there's one. It's a full deck of cards this weekend. And we're going to hit on a lot of my bits because we've got Islam Makhachev, Mousasi, Liam McCourt and Sinead Kavanagh, all the things that I love ragging on. But I suppose we'll start with the UFC. It was supposed to be Islam Makhachev versus Beneil Dariush. That would have been a very fun fight, or at least fun matchup. Dariush on a great little run beat Diego Ferreira. Beat Tony Ferguson, which is one that we don't really value that much anymore. But I guarantee if Islam wins the belt, the first person he's calling out is Tony Ferguson and then RDA. I don't know. It's kind of like the Eagle FC thing where Habib has now unironically booked Kevin Lee versus Diego Sanchez. And it's quite interesting because we joke about the Russian MMA scene, or certainly how these Dagestanis have come up. The famous Dagestanis, that is. There's an awful lot of record padding, and it's like they don't care who it is as long as you get the number, which is why the Habib 29-0 or whatever it is always a bit sketch, because, like, sure, there might be guys who are 15-4 or whatever, but they've lost to four great guys, whereas and 10 of the 15 might be against great guys, whereas Habib fought about eight great guys in his entire career. But then there's the other side of that. Like, what if you get so good and you could beat guys like Justin Gaethje so easily that you genuinely do think all wins are equal? you're out of touch because you are so successful. And that's a weird way to look at it, but it's quite interesting. Maybe Habib thinks that a win over Diego Sanchez is exactly the same as a win over Justin Gaethje. Because the way that he talks about Aldo, like, well, he's lost once recently, so he should probably retire. He's never going to be great again. Just bizarre. But at any rate, Dariush snapped his ankle or something like that. And I can almost guarantee that it's his left ankle, because that's the one he's always punting people in the arm and body with. But he's injured and out, and they've managed to get Bobby Green to sign on to the fight almost immediately. I hope they offered him a shit ton of cash, because he's riding high off like one of the most impressive performances. Actually, I'm going to say the most impressive performance of his career, where he went three rounds and didn't get touched by Nasrat Haqparast and landed incredible number of strikes, hurt him a few times. It was just everything that you like about Bobby Green with the additional stuff that other people will like. Because liking Bobby Green until recently has been... Damn, this guy's got some cool moves and skills, but there's no reason to really take any notice of him because he doesn't finish anyone, he doesn't hurt anyone. He often goes to the decision and either wins or loses a close one because he doesn't push his advantages. Whereas now he seems to be having a little Jorge Masvidal late career renaissance, Hasn't been stopping people, but he did stop Ally Quinta. Ally Quinta, fairly washed, but great name to have on in the win column, and great name to have a stoppage over, you know, when Ally Quinta is able to go five rounds with Khabib Nurmagomedov at his peak. Knocking him out a couple of years removed from that is still going to be impressive. Especially if you're the first one to do it, because I can't remember anyone else knocking Ally Quinta out. But probably more significant than the Hack Parast and the Ally Quinta ones are his decision loss to Thiago Moises that he probably should have won, and his, which is, I mean, only important because Moises got a fight against Makhachev off that, and it was a main event. But Rafael Fiziev's the really interesting one because Fiziev is so scary and tricky, and Bobby Green could have won that fight, but didn't. I mean, that's the story of Bobby Green's career. So I think the interesting thing here is that I'm trying to work out who's closest to Makhachev in terms of style that Bobby Green has fought, and honestly, struggling to find anyone. He's fought a lot of good strikers like Barboza, Poirier, Bonatta is a decent striker, Alon Patrigas is not a decent striker, and sort of like all-rounders. I mean, Francisco Trinaldo he's fought, but Francisco Trinaldo, while strong in the clinch, is very low activity guy, which, you know, plays into Bobby Green, if anything, and Bobby Green still lost that one. But Francisco Trinaldo is a well-timed overhand left and nice outside trips from the clinch when he wants to, with a lot of not doing much in between. Whereas Makhachev is, while not an all-action fighter, he is always plodding towards his goal. And just to be clear, I think I'm framing this in the right way, where Islam Makhachev is the challenge to be overcome. Bobby Green is I don't think anyone is favouring Bobby Green coming into this fight, particularly at short notice. But then I think that Bobby Green, with a 3-month camp or whatever, or an 8-week camp for Islam Makhachev, I don't know if he benefits that much from that, as opposed to this being at short notice, because I think Bobby Green does what he does, and that's an intriguing style. It's a unique style, the switch hitting, the shoulder rolling, the straight hitting, and the strong wrestling and scrambling. But I think that Bobby Green's really come into his own lately because he's the kind of fighter who's going to benefit from fighting often and just being very difficult and having lots of experience. Whereas I think that there are fighters, obviously, who can change themselves to fight a better game plan by drilling themselves for 8 weeks. I think whatever Bobby Green's got is going to be an issue for Islam Makhachev now, or it isn't. It isn't something that he can really change to make Makhachev's life more difficult. And I think, you know, and I think that obviously Makhachev taking a change of opponent at short notice and getting someone who is quite weird, like Bobby Green, is obviously in Bobby Green's advantage. You know, that's his advantages in this fight are few, but I would count that as one of them. Whereas if you were getting someone like Gaethje to come in at the last minute, I'd be going, no, take the 8 weeks, work out the habits of Makhachev and train for them. So Makhachev himself, I've been watching a lot of him lately, probably more in a concentrated go than I have at any other point. Well, I was going to say in my career, in his career, both. I do have an appreciation for Islam Makhachev, and I think I can see why people don't like him as much as Khabib, because he's getting the Khabib rub, and he's constantly being likened to Khabib, but he doesn't have that same fire, visibly, as Khabib. When Khabib took people down, I have friends who have told me that Khabib's style is boring or whatever, but most people, even casuals who see Khabib, see him holding people down and hitting them, constantly trying to hit them. If you watch him in those positions where he gets the sits on the ankles along the fence, he crosses his feet over their ankles as they're trying to sit up and get to their feet, so that their ankles are trapped underneath his hips, basically. It's a position that you can hold and stall the guy from getting up. And that, for a long time, that's what that was. If you watch Josh Thompson versus KJ Nunes, in what I immediately remember because I wanted KJ Nunes to win, but Jake Shields versus Mayhem Miller, and then Mayhem Miller versus Michael Bisping, these guys who just hit the takedown, or Johnny Hendricks versus Robbie Lawler, I think, one where they hit the takedown and they just sit on the ankles and they press their face into the guy's chest, and the entire purpose of the technique is to stop the guy getting up. Whereas when you watch Khabib do it to Michael Johnson, Edson Barbosa, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, whoever, he sits on the ankles, he puts his head in their chest, and then he frames off their collarbone with one hand and starts throwing uppercuts. And that was one of the ones that really keyed me into this guy wanting to hit and hurt people, because I'd never seen anyone do that, and he's the only one doing it. And the striking stats for his performances back it up. He's always grappling, but he's always hitting too. And that's what we always loved about Fedor. Didn't care if the guy got back to guard, if he got to hit him. And Khabib has that same sort of confidence where, yeah, if he gets his guard back, I'll just start passing his guard again. Why would I care? I'll just keep hitting him. Makhachev has that same sort of confidence in his guard passing and all his other stuff where he seems like, yeah, it's no big deal, I'll just pass the guard again, or I'll just get him down again. But he does, his top game is almost entirely control and very little striking. And I've seen him crack people, but it's never that same, you know, when you watch Fedor or when you watch Khabib, there's only been a few guys, but when you watch them and they're throwing punches, standing over people, you're going, fuck me, I don't want to be that guy. But then the thing that people say about Islam, and I think Khabib has also said it, but he is a better rounded fighter. And I think that's, you can see that in a few areas, whereas Khabib benefited from his amazing aggression, his overwhelming in-your-face sort of style. Islam Akhachev is much more measured. He will take 3 or 4 minutes to move a guy to the fence. If you watch that Moises fight, barely gets to grappling in the first round, even though it's his game plan to get on top and smash this dude. Whereas, when was the last time you saw Khabib Nurmagomedov fight for more than a minute in the first round without trying to get the fight to the ground? And I think part of that is because Makhachev's striking was so disappointing when he came to the UFC. It was okay, as we talked about in the new Filthy Casuals guide, which should have come out yesterday by my reckoning. I'm trying scheduling things now for reasons I will tell you later in the show. But it was all very wide swinging. It was leaning in behind his chin. When you watched him against Adriano Martins, he looked so uncomfortable. He just ran chin first onto a punch. But before that, he'd been running after him, trying to catch him. And then you watch him in his modern performances, and he very quickly learned to use a left straight and a left body kick, and learned distancing, which is the most important part of striking. Just keeping the distance correct. If the guy gets too close to him or starts swinging on him, he can duck into a clinch, which is always a massive advantage, having the guy scared of you getting in his armpits. But it's night and day, his striking, from the beginning of his UFC career to now, which is especially impressive because he's been in combat sambo since he was a child. So he probably had about 10, 15 years of bad habits that he corrected in 5 or 6. But one of the interesting things is that in that Filthy Casuals guide, I talk about how he was just sort of swinging to get the clinch, and he does good work with the overhooks, so it was enough to get the overhooks. Boxing and kickboxing better has given him this better ability to just duck in and pick up an underhook when the time's right. He also very good at jumping on the double collar tie. Think Fabricio Verdum, Benil Dariush, Wanderlei Silva, obviously back in the day, Shogun Hua, where you punch the guy and you grab his head as he's covering up. And I use the term collar tie in my Filthy Casuals guide, which hasn't come out yet, but I can almost guarantee someone will get mad at it because the examples I used, a couple of them were over ties. The over tie is a collar tie, so you're grabbing the back of the opponent's neck, but it's over their arm. They might be grabbing your head, or you might be going over their guard in like a kickboxing context. But same shit. And Makhachev's ability to grab people's heads and threaten the knee, because he hurt... He knocked down Davy Hamos with a knee in the third round. But his ability to threaten that and hammer in uppercuts from the collar tie as well gives him access to the underhooks and the overhook as well, because guys will either step in and grab him and he takes the overhook, or they'll back up and he'll just grab an underhook underneath. So it's this thing where the whole point of that video is to say, in his early career and when you see him along the fence defending takedowns and things, he was very good with the overhook, which is something that I think everyone should be aspiring to in modern MMA. But back then he sort of needed to be, because he was swinging to get clinches and they'd always end up with the underhook. Whereas now his striking allows him to get better clinch position. And the thing with overhooks and underhooks is that there's stuff you can attack off the overhook. I think that's what people overlook. And I always reference Ray F. Carson, who was an American wrestling coach. He wrote a series of books, but one of them was called Counter Control for Championship Wrestling, I think it was. And he talked about everything being a game of controls. When your opponent has a control, you either want to undo it, so strip a grip or whatever, neutralize it, or take your own control. So if someone takes an underhook on you, you can try and get it out. You can post your head. Well, for our purposes, you could post your head and try and get their arm out of your armpit. Maybe you fall into a 50-50 clinch, so you both have an underhook. Or maybe you work on a really strong whizzer or overhook, and then their underhook attacks are against your overhook attacks. But there are still a lot of mechanical advantages if you get the underhooks. Like, it's a lot harder for the guy to turn himself off the fence if you have both underhooks. So Makhachev being able to box his way in has really improved his ability to get easier, stronger takedowns. If you watch him against Dober, where he grabs a double collar tie and tries to knee him, Dober's trying to deal with it, and in the course of trying to deal with it, he opens up his armpits, Makhachev takes double underhooks and immediately hits an inside trip and gets into top of full guard. Whereas when you watch Makhachev's fights against Leo Kuntz, Chris Wade back in the day, if he was still fighting like that, I think that Drew Dober wouldn't have had much trouble with him at all. I think Drew Dober would have given him an awful lot of trouble, and Makhachev would be trying to take bad takedowns and bad clinches that didn't really favour him. So I think this one is going to be interesting. I think it's probably to Bobby Green's advantage that Makhachev has the confidence on the feet now and will spend so long on the outside, because that's less time being pushed against the fence. It's not the Khabib, just constant pressure. You've got five rounds to work in. Problem is, Bobby Green, not much of a hitter. So where if he was the technician he is now, but he was good at landing the odd big telling blow, I could see him stealing rounds. If you can make very little happen, but when you land your punch, the guy stumbles a bit or something like that, that's the stuff that the judges can easily go, okay, 10-9 him. Very close round, but 10-9 him. Whereas I think that's going to be very difficult for Bobby Green here. Haven't seen a lot of Bobby Green on the bottom lately. I'm very intrigued to see how he does along the fence, in fence work. I can imagine that Makhachev probably has a bit of trouble taking him down with a regular shot or trying to get underhooks and work from an over-under clinch or something like that. Staying off the fence should be a priority. I mean, it should have been a priority against Khabib, because he'll shoot and drive you back 10 feet towards the cage. But with Makhachev, if you watch that Moises fight, Makhachev's just chilling, throwing strikes, and Moises is walking himself onto the fence for the first 3 minutes of the fight, and then Makhachev's like, okay, well, now I will take this very easy takedown. So I think you've got a bit more chance of staying off the fence without someone just sprinting at you and pushing you there. He's not going to tire himself out as much as Khabib could have if people were circling off the fence effectively, but hopefully more time and space to circle out before you get to the fence. I think one of the interesting things that Makhachev and Khabib have sort of exposed is that a lot of the MMA meta, if you look at that fight that I called 2020 UFC meta, which was Neil Magny versus Anthony Rocco Martin, both of them duck in on good takedown attempts on the other, or get like a body lock or whatever, and the other guy will throw his arm over the head, stand against the fence and turn his own back, and then work to separate the hands. Think of the position that Israel Adesanya was in against Robert Whittaker the other night, where you're trying to break their hands apart on your hip and then turn back into them. And guys are getting very good at breaking the hands there, which is why people go there. But I would say that's sort of like the wrestler defense to fence work now, is to just throw your arm over the head, turn the back, separate the hands, because it's a way to make something happen. It's a way to get away. That's what Israel Adesanya is very good at, that a lot of guys like Alex Pereira have not shown to be good at. Make stuff happen, get away. Don't just get flattened to the fence. And then the other side of that is the guys who are good with the overhooks, people like Islam, Shavkat, Stephanie Egger the other night. Even Jessica Penne actually has been doing decent work with the overhooks, just trying to jump triangles on people. But then you get into that situation where you could get pressed against the fence for a long time and held. But I think it's telling that Islam Makhachev, when he's pressed to the fence, uses the overhook a lot and then uses the threat of the trip to dig an underhook on the other side or get a collar tie to create space and then circle out. The throw is sort of, it's there, but he very rarely lands those big, like Al Hassan on Hakeem Buckley, caught him dead to rights, he's on his back now, sort of throws. If you watch the Moises fight, what he does is he hits a Haraguchi, throws him, but Moises freezes wrist and bellies down and immediately hops up again. But in that space, Makachev gets an underhook on the far side, which was the thing that he was struggling to get all along. That's the thing that the opponent's going to keep from you. And then when you've got an underhook and they've got an underhook, you can turn them and you're on the they're on the fence. You know, it's still a strength game, but you actually have something to lift with now. But I can see Bobby doing the turn your back sort of stuff in this fight. And that's where Makachev and Khabib have been doing so well. Just the simple mat return, step around the side, block the knee, drag the guy down to his hands and knees, and beat him up as he comes up again. You watch the Abel Trujillo-Khabib fight, it's a great example of that. But what we always say with guys who love mat returns and things like and back body lock work is Granbys all the fucking time. You maybe only get two or three good goes at it before they start adapting, but it still seems to be something that works well at the highest levels against the best wrestlers, if you can time the Granby as they're trying to mat return you. But it's 25 minutes. It's a long time to keep Islam Makhachev off you. I think it's well in Bobby's interest to keep switching stances because Makhachev, one of the things that you get from as a read from watching his game is that he benefits enormously from being a southpaw and having other people struggle to know what to do with southpaws because he really just relies on the left straight and the left high kick and body kick. He doesn't have an awful lot of tools. He just does that, distances well, pivots out the side door when they come in and try and chase him down. I think a lot of switching between one stance and the other could end up with Islam getting blindsided by a little left straight down the center or a right straight down the center. You know, a southpaw left straight, if Bobby's southpaw or he's southpaw, I could see him getting caught with something like that if Bobby's switching between. But again, the more you switch, if you're not doing it side to side, out to the side of them, if you're doing it straight in front of them, you are very much giving them the chance to just bundle you over. So anyway, that's my thoughts on this fight. I think I would love Bobby Green to pull it off, not just because people think I hate Islam Makhachev. But no, I'd like to see Bobby Green pull it off because I'd like Bobby Green to actually become a really good fighter. And he's the Aya Quinta win, no matter how little I think of it compared to some of his other work, like the Fiziev fight, it certainly seems to have given him confidence. And that's half the game. Makhachev, you know, he's probably due his title shot. I did have a laugh about him getting a title shot off beating Bobby Green because of how absurd that sounds. But, you know, you can't wait for people forever. You can't wait for people to get healthy forever. I mean, maybe they rebook the Beneil Dariush fight. It just sort of depends what's going on in the division. But there don't seem to be many other logical contenders after Gaethje's had a shot at Oliveira. Bugger me, I got rambling on the meta of cage work in MMA, and I managed to get like 10 good minutes out of that fight. Let's talk about some of the other stuff that's going on this weekend, sort of all over the place, because there's just shit on random cards, like Priscilla Cachuera versus Ji-Yun Kim is on the main card of the UFC. Why? Like, not only are both of those pretty bad fighters, I mean, Priscilla Cachuera is a very bad fighter, but she just, was it her third loss in a row? And she tried to gouge the girl's eye out? What is going on? But the ONE FC event is an interesting one, mainly because it's headlined by Renier de Ridder, who is great fun. He's the best Dutch fighter going today. The only Dutch middleweight that's really worth caring about. But de Ridder's great. He beat Ong Lashong in a light heavyweight title fight, and then he went up and took his heavyweight belt as well. But he choked him out the first time, and Ong Lashong actually made it the distance the second time. So respect to Ong Lashong, who normally relies on the referee standing him up when he looks at them, which we'll get into in a second. But René de Ridder is, I mean, his striking is pretty haphazard, but he's a very slick grappler. Very slick MMA grappler. You know, the kind of guy who's great at getting on backs and passing guards and things, but also can take people down, which is the part that almost every grappler with a great pedigree in MMA sucks at. Oh no, sorry, René de Ridder took Ong Lashong's light heavyweight title, then he went down and took his middleweight title, or the other way around. It's not the heavyweight title, the heavyweight division is just what's listed on Tapology, but it's not actually heavyweight, it's one weights. They're all over the place. But basically, René de Ridder is now going to fight their welterweight champion, but he fights at 185 because of the rehydration testing or whatever. So it'll be fun. I mean, Abasov's on a good little run. René de Ridder is a great grappler, which is always the good thing to have if the other guy's coming up in weight. But there's a couple of other things on this card that are worth noting, like Ong Lashong versus Vitaly Big Dash. This is the completion of a trilogy. worth watching the first and second fights because Big Dash does wonderfully in the first fight, mixing up striking and takedowns and gets the decision. Second fight, they do for the title. And Yuji Shimada, the Pride referee, Mr. Boo, is there. And every time that Ong Dashong is taken down, oh, there's so many times where Ong Dashong is taken down, he's sitting on the fence getting beaten up, like in Habib position. And he just looks at the referee and the ref goes, okay, let's get up, and stands him up. Happens multiple times, and it's why Ong Dashong was able to win the decision. It's so funny. Watch any fight in one, the referees look to the outside to be told what to do, or at least have been caught doing that in a couple of fights in the past. But I like Big Dash. In a division which worldwide is filled with trash fighters, I think he's quite a breath of fresh air. Just competent striker, competent grappler. Often comes in shape. I mean, he's probably juiced off his tits, but you know, I don't care. But I said that René Derrida is the most important Dutch middleweight fight in this weekend. But there's another one. If you like regional stuff, Gegard Mousasi's fighting Mr. Paige VanZant, Austin Vandervoort. This is quite compelling, actually, because Austin Vandervoort, I mean, he hasn't fought anyone great coming up. Who was the last person I saw him against? Oh, he beat Fabian Edwards, but then so did Big Tuna. Yeah, he's not fought anyone amazing coming up. He's done a couple of cool things in grappling, like he beat Boogie, Richie Martinez. Did lose in a grappling match to Mr. Give Me Unvaccinated Dicks, Jake Shields. But yeah, he's been getting by on his strong wrestling grappling game, which is always compelling against Gegard Mousasi because when he's met guys who are strong grapplers and can do takedowns, they've just ragdolled him. Now, granted, Chris Weidman got tired, and to be fair, Rafael Lovato got pretty tired doing it, but if you watch the Jacare fight, the King Mo fight, the Lovato fight, the Weidman fight, they're just throwing him around. His takedown defense is not great. So there's the compelling part of it. But he has been using his own wrestling a lot more recently. If you watch his fight with Salter, he's just cage wrestling the entire time and following him around the cage while the commentary team are going, great ring cutting from Mousasi, who's really just walking around in a circle and jabbing. But if Mousasi wins, expect renewed calls for him to be allowed to compete in the UFC as a Bellator fighter. But I say this as not doing a bit now. Vandervoort's a bit of an unknown, but the wrestling has always been an issue for Mousasi, so you'll get to see if Mousasi has made some strides in that regard defensively. And if he hasn't, I could see Vandervoort being a pretty tough fight for him. I will say that Mousasi's always been pretty good at defending himself on the ground. His guard's pretty good. So it could be the case that he drops a round or two and then brings himself back into it because, you know, Vandervoort's never gone five. And Mousasi, for all his faults in terms of just not throwing right hands and not fighting good opposition, he does have a pretty good gas tank. He's pretty consistent round to round. So what's on the rest of the UFC card that's worth writing home about? Not a lot. I mean, I've just moaned about Priscilla Cachoeira. Oh, sorry, I completely missed this because it's buried like at the first fight of the main card. Armin Sarukian versus Joel Alvarez. I fucking love that fight. I've been hyping that fight up for a couple of weeks, actually. Armin Sarukian, important guy because I was just watching his fight against Islam Makhachev. That is so high level. It's incredibly good fight. I mean, there are fights where people are like, oh, this is high level grappling. It's two dudes just sort of like scrambling all over each other and spazzing out. That one was actually high level. They're attempting slick techniques just on the fly. And Sarukian did one of the better jobs staying out from underneath Makhachev in the first two rounds. He just sort of got stuck against the cage in the third. But out in the open, he was using butterfly hooks really well to create scrambles. Like he'd use the... So Makhachev would get an underhook and start driving through to half guard or past the guard. And Sarukian would use that as the overhook to lift him with the butterfly hooks, but fail to sweep him because Makhachev's base is so good. But he'd be able to, as Makhachev was sort of riding the sweep around to the side, Sarukian would dig his arm underneath and come up on a single leg. So he used these butterfly sweeps to get to his hands and knees or turn in and come up, as opposed to trying to complete the sweep. Also got Makhachev off his feet, and Makhachev had like 100% takedown defense ratio in the UFC before that fight. It did take Sarukian a ton of work to get him off his feet, though. But it's interesting because Sarukian in recent fights has been more of sort of like an all-rounder, but focusing on his kickboxing. In that one, he came out and he tried to take Makachev down from the get-go, which is very ballsy, but also seemed to throw Makachev off a bit. But his last one was that awesome counter left hook against Christos Yagos. I keep saying it, but counter left hooks are going to be the next big thing. As soon as guys realize, oh, everyone leaves their chin on a platter and throws in two punches at a time and always ends with their right hand, they're going to start starching people with left hooks. But Sarukin's left hand and left lead leg kicking game are great. You see, that's one of the cool things about sort of the... Well, I was going to say Russians, but he's Armenian by way of Russia. Wait, Armenian? Isn't that an ethnic group? And he, ah, fuck. Let me break out my fucking skull measurers. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of guys in the Eastern Bloc come in and they build as kickboxers. I'm thinking like of people like Igor Vovchanchin and stuff, where they build as kickboxers, but they've got really weird styles of kickboxing. It's kind of like when we hear about a kickboxer in America, we also think of sort of Dutch-style kickboxing, but they could mean the spin-off from American karate, the Bill Wallace style of kickboxing, the Chuck Norris, Wonder Boy style of kickboxing, Raymond Daniels. And Jukani brothers, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. But Joel Alvarez representing Spain. Not a lot of Spanish fighters. Haven't heard an awful lot about... Yeah, I was just thinking that. There's a couple of Portuguese... No, wait, there's a Portuguese lad in Bellator who fights at a straight blast gym. What's his name? Pedro something or other. Or it might not be Pedro and I'm just being subconsciously racist. But yeah, it's for some reason just hasn't caught on big there yet. But Joel Alvarez is certainly leading the charge. He's been fantastic. He's on a four-fight winning streak. All finishes back to Demir Ismagulov, who is very, very tricky. Demir Ismagulov, if he was managed by Ali Abdulaziz, he would be doing so well right now because he's unbeaten. He's beaten good guys. If they just started claiming that everyone was ducking him, he'd be the most famous man in the UFC at the moment, but he hasn't. Also, he only ever gets decisions. Makachev's a fairly slow-paced fighter and people still get on board with that. But Ismagulov is missing a trick there. Though he did, for his last fight, he ended up missing weight by like 10 pounds and they had to call it off. That was against Magomed Mustaev. That was going to be a shit-hot fight, I thought, but sadly we were robbed of it. But anyway, Joel Alvarez, undefeated back to Ismagulov. And had an amazing streak before that too. But his recent ones, he stopped Belluardo by ground and pound. He beat Joe Duffy by guillotine. And that was in 2020. I didn't even realize Joe Duffy was still around then. And then Jakovlevy armbarred. And then the Thiago Moises one was gorgeous. His pairing of the right elbow, which he turns over on people because he hand fights. And obviously he's so tall over a lot of these guys. He can just reach out, put his hands on their hands and turn over the elbow. And close to like a clinch, or he'll hit him with the knee. And the great thing about the elbow is that that folding over right elbow encourages guys to raise their hand, and he also throws a lot of right overhands as well, which when you're tall, they just turn into sort of like right hooks, but he throws a lot of those, and it makes guys raise their left elbow, and that means he can skewer them with the right knee. So he was hammering the right knee to the body on Thiago Moises, and I loved it. Be very interesting to see how he works against Sarukian, who is so sawn off because, firstly sawn off, but also so active with his left hand. Because if you've got a guy throwing his right arm all the time, particularly committing to big things like elbows, you're sort of opening yourself up for the to be chinned by the counter left hook. But equally, I wouldn't want to be throwing my left hand a lot if I thought this guy was going to smash through a right elbow, a folding elbow at any time that I drop my hand. And of course, when you're throwing left hooks, your left hand is away from your body, which means spearing right knees. But the other thing is the height difference. Joel Alvarez, I didn't even realize how fucking tall he is for lightweight. He's 6'3". That's absurd. Whereas Armin Tarukian is 5'7". You know, you saw him against Makachev and he was looking short there, but he's 5'7". And he's also 72-inch reach versus 77-inch reach. You know, half a foot of reach and half a foot of height. That adds up. Particularly if one of your weapons is the left hook. You know, you're going to be swinging up at the guy and you might have to leap for him. You know, you're not going to get those same... oh, please come to me and I'll just hit you with the left hook on the way in sort of connections. But then there's the wrestling also, because Sarukian's wrestling has looked fucking amazing. And he works from Tiger Muay Thai, so he's probably pretty good in the clinch as well with the striking. Whereas what I've seen of Alvarez seems to be more makes up for it with strong guillotines, good ground game. Which, I mean, you know, I'm always going to say like, oh, well, you can't do that at the highest level, but Charles Oliveira is the champion. So clearly you can use it at the highest level. I'm intrigued to see if this hits the mat with Alvarez underneath, if he can make action and get up, or if he ends up just getting held down by a stronger wrestler. But yeah, I absolutely love this fight. This is one of those ones that's going to piss me off because one of them has to lose. Whereas Makhachev, Dariush pissed me off because one of them had to win. anything else good? Bahamondes is fun, and he's fighting Zurong, who's also pretty fun. Armen Petrosian's back, who I mistakenly thought was Giorgio Petrosian's brother. That's a different Armen Petrosian. I think Armin Petrosian. But this Armen Petrosian is a light heavyweight. And if you saw him on the Contender Series, he head kicked a dude with his lead leg. It was really nice. He was just he was defending takedowns. He turned the guy off the fence, and then he'd throw a nice combination and a head kick. And he did it a couple of times to knock the guy out. He's fighting Gregory Rodriguez, who beat Dusko Todorovic and Junyeon Park recently. I can't remember a thing about him except that I remember his weird-ass head, his weird-shaped head, but I don't remember the fights. What else is good? Terence McKinney, is he the guy who's always simping for the UFC on Twitter? If he's not, forget I said that. Alejandro Perez is back. He is such a funny dude. He's just so socially awkward. He doesn't know, like, if you watch him at weigh-ins and stare-downs, he doesn't know what to do with his hands. And he strikes like that too. He's so rigid and he just sort of runs in swing. He's completely stiff until he's swinging. He doesn't have any of that movement in between. So if you watched him against Song Yadong, it was a very easy win for Yadong. But he did just beat Johnny Eduardo, who isn't great, but, you know, fun stuff. Josiane Nunes is on the card, who's important for being able to bang as a woman. She knocked out Bia Malecki recently. Was it Bia Malecki who was recently giving horror stories about her two concussions and how she's forgetting stuff? That was not nice. And Jinyu Frey's back against Hannah Goldie, which is boring fighters, but jacked ladies with abs and arms. Honestly, Jinyu Frey's missed a trick by not doing cosplay OnlyFans page. At least I don't think she has one. If she does have one, kindly link me in the comments section. But that is how Hannah Goldie's making tons of money. And Kay Hansen is supposed to be like top 1% in OnlyFans or something like that. And respect to you. And respect to people who are horny and sign up for it, because it's one of the few ways that you can actually directly fund fighters. Yes, I am bringing OnlyFans into the class war. So anything else notable on these ones? We've done the UFC card. Did I do the co-main? Oh, Misha Serkinov versus Wellington Turman. I don't give a shit about that, to be honest, lads. Bellator's co-main event is Peter Queeley versus an English lad who I've never heard of. And then they got Liam McCourt versus Sinead Kavanagh, which I think could be one of the worst fights of all time. Liam McCourt's last fight was the worst fight I've ever watched. I'm quite looking forward to this one just to see how bad it can be. But they've also got a 6-0 Rusky called Magomed Sharipov. Any relation? No idea. But he's sneaking into that undercard, so could be one to watch. And then Brett Johns is back, and you know he's had a bit of a fall off in his career, but I do like him. Fabian Edwards is back. Yeah, nothing else to care about on there. Petch Morakot's fighting in one in their co-main event. He's always fun. Has a win over Giorgio Petrosian, which they had to take to the board and overturn. And then KSW, they got Phil Dufresne defending his title, which, you know, I like Phil Dufresne. He was pretty crap in the UFC, but he's actually come on quite a bit in KSW. And he also is just, he was just a fat dude who took up MMA to lose weight, you know, like the standard women's MMA origin story, except he did it in real divisions against real scary opponents. Well, as real as light heavyweight and heavyweight can be. And just a chill guy all round. So I think that's most of the fights this weekend covered. There's a lot on. And there's probably some fucking kickboxing and boxing too, which I forgot to even talk about. I was going to talk about Kell Brook but Amir Khan, but yeah, I mean, you probably know what... It's just Amir Khan, damn, your chin sucks, mate. But courageous to get through to the end. But I am going to be out of town for a couple of days. Well, I say a couple of days, it's going to be more like a week and a bit. So I am going to miss the recaps on this. And I was going to do a preview for Colby Covington versus Jorge Masvidal and that card in this episode. But these things like fall apart before they... to do it a week and a bit out is kind of risky, because these things fall apart like a day. In the day between me publishing something and it come in and it coming out as a preview, things will fall apart. So always risky with this sport. So I didn't do that. But I do have stuff coming out. We've got the Advanced Dragon 2.0 on Volkanovski, which I promised is scheduled to drop. And 30 Years War episode. And might get something else in there as well. So yeah, you know, it's going to be managed. I'm on my phone, so I'll be able to do stuff. I'm just not at my recording desk. Appreciate your patience and your support. Yeah, you know where to find all my shit. You're already a boy. I'm your boy, Jack Smack. Joel Alvarez with the only good right knee in MMA. Actually, fuck no, because I was going to say Islam Makhachev has really good knees when his back is to the fence. Joel Alvarez carrying forward the hope that I had for Joe Duffy. Bless.